Good afternoon. Yes, we're all in this together, aren't we? Linda, I'd particularly like to thank you and the panel, really, because this is a session that you selected, and I think it's a session of enormous importance, and I'm pretty glad that the room is filled, because I know we all kind of get it. I want to focus and build on what my colleagues have said by focusing particularly on prevention. And my notion of primary prevention, I think, fits broadly with some of the communities that Carmen described as needing not only primary prevention, but secondary and tertiary, because it really is around issues of community building. And I want to start where we are right now, which is the first generation since the United States was founded that is predicting that its children will have shorter lifespans than the parents. And that's unacceptable. Discussions of healthcare reform to include more people at a point where our healthcare system already is crumbling. And at the same time, the inequities and disparities that we face and the dramatic differences in health status by community, by ethnic group, by economic status, etc. And finally, add to all that the fact that our financial system now has crumbled, and we're talking about stimulus packages. And I think in all of those, and particularly in what I'm calling the next stimulus package, which I hope by the time we walk out of this room will all be clear, must emphasize prevention as a significant piece of stimulus, the next stimulus package as part of the hope. But in all of these questions, in all of these concerns, I see prevention in the middle. And let me just show you one picture that I think explains the importance, sent to me by someone who'd heard me speak previously. This is from a low-income community in the South. It's funny and it's not funny. I think it shows us that we need a very, very different way of thinking, or as Albert Einstein put it, the problems we face are not going to be solved by the same level of consciousness that created them. It's not more social marketing like that, where the people were, you know, literally trying to pitch in and help with diabetes with that advertisement. So I want to talk conceptually about where we go with this. And there's a model we've been working on at Prevention Institute, which we call Taking Two Steps Back. And I'm going to present it as quickly as possible and just with one step, but it was developed, in fact, with a focus on inequities and on disparities. But because we're talking about the same injuries and illnesses for the most part for everyone, I think what we're talking about is improving the well-being of everyone, and particularly even more so the groups that are most inequitably affected. But I think right now what makes sense both politically and practically is to focus on the entire population and to focus most intensively on the population most affected. I think that's how we're going to be successful. These are five leading causes of death, also five leading areas of inequity and disparity. And I think if we look at those with the same level of consciousness, what comes to mind when we say, what are we going to do about it, is research or medical care, or, you know, somehow we're going to treat it, or what is the newest pill going to be. But when we take a look and remember that all of these leading causes of death and leading causes of injury and leading causes of illness and leading causes of cost are this web which has to do with our lifestyle and the communities which foster that lifestyle, I think we have a different level of consciousness. We think of it in a very different way. We start to understand it's the environment that we're involved in. And we understand very clearly the link between the environment and toxic exposures to air, to water, to soil. But we equally need to understand the links between the environment and behavior. And the way the links between environment and behavior, and often I personally use the word norms for that, how those links also foster health. So that pictures like the first picture I showed you are fostering ill health, or other community photos that we can create will foster good health. As the Institute of Medicine put it, it's unreasonable to expect that people will change their behavior easily when so many forces in the social, cultural, and physical environment conspire against such changes. It's unreasonable to expect people will change their behavior easily, and yet we somehow expect it or say, okay, otherwise let's wait for last resort and just think about the medical system without saying, what is our community environment in the first place that does not conspire against such change? A simple example, that's my nephew Milo. You can't tell what state he's from, right? He's not from California like I am, I don't think. But I put this picture there because, it cheers me up. But also because Milo always gets in his car seat. He's now 7. He tells his younger brother, who's about this age, that he too needs to get in his car seat. He reminds me to buckle my seatbelt. I worked probably a generation ago with Andrew on car seat laws, seatbelt laws. We had lots of education about car seats saving lives, yet there was not a single state with more than 23% usage of car seats for infants. Once we passed the law, the norm changed. There was a new tipping factor from that, and we have virtually universal use of car seats. So we end up with, oh, Brittany, what are you doing? That's child abuse. It wouldn't have been child abuse a generation ago, would it? It would have been just the way we behave. And so this notion for me of norms as behavior shapers becomes very important in what we do about prevention. Let me give you another example I really like. This is tobacco. I worked early on in my career on the first multi-city no smoking laws. Now, we had a room like this, and we said, if it's a restaurant, 40% no smoking, 60% smoking, smokers over here, non-smokers there. We didn't even do 50-50 because we were showing we're trying to be reasonable. Now, we know if we move the smokers to one corner and the non-smokers to the other, that's going to prevent cancer, right? Of course not. That's going to prevent heart disease. Of course not. But it did. And the reason it did was because it was the beginning in a battle, in a bidding war, which led to significant norms change. For those of you in the back, it says, that's the third smoker we've lost this week. We're not anti-smoker. We're pro-smoker. But this shows very well how norms changes the environment. And in fact, in California, we see dramatic drops in rates of smoking, even more so if we could have worked more intensively, more effectively. This is a whole list. These are just ones I wrote up from my career, places where clearly prevention works. We can change the environment. We can improve our health. And the majority of costly conditions are preventable. Over the last years, from 1987 just to 2000, we saw, and of course the expenses are continuing to rise, nearly $200 billion in increased medical expenses, with 15 diseases accounting for more than half. So here's our current healthcare spending. On the left, the factors influencing health. We've got the behavior environment, we've got genetics, and we've got medical services. Which is the 70%, which is the 20%, which is the 10%? I think we pretty much know where it is. And clearly then, with behavior and environment at 70%, there's no question that the preponderance of our national health expenditures are on prevention. Is that right? We got 96% on prevention and 4% on treatment. Is that right? Unfortunately, no. We need the treatment. We need both. Prevention can't be, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to add that. And so in work we've done with Jeff Levy and Trust for America's Health, New York Academy of Medicine, and the Urban Institute, we started to look at some of the cost savings related to community primary prevention of chronic disease, and we discovered some very interesting information, which if you don't know it, we think it's really important that you do. For each dollar investment in community prevention, by the end of the second year, we've got that dollar back and another dollar of return on investment. By the end of 5 years, we're getting 560 back every year. Or to put it another way, if we don't act now, we're leaving $16 billion on the table. I've heard we've got an economic problem. Maybe those $16 billion 5 years from now could be helpful. Investing in prevention makes economic sense as well as making gut sense. And that's just one part of the savings, frankly, what I shared with you, because there's a multiplier effect, and those savings don't count workplace savings. They don't count savings from other diseases. They don't count increased productivity in schools, et cetera, et cetera. So let me give you a couple of examples of this community work. This was Rochester, New York. The supermarket burned down. We all know that people, when there are more supermarkets, people eat more healthy fruits and vegetables. You know, one study showed a 33% increase by African Americans in the census tracts where there were supermarkets as compared to the census tract where there weren't. And yet we have communities without supermarkets, and we don't say that's a critical part of our health strategy. 7 years later, after years of battle, after very little government support, community groups won that battle. Imagine if we said this is part of our prevention agenda. This is part of what we need to insist on. And clearly a supermarket's just one example of a good solution that solves multiple problems. We're talking about what people are going to eat when there's a supermarket, but we're also talking about community pride. We're also talking about social capital. We're also talking, and we will be talking about it after next week, the incredible importance of registering new voters, the ironing boards outside supermarkets. A good solution can solve a lot of our problems. Life was there again. It transformed the community. That was Hank Herrera, one of the organizers of that effort. And one more example, and the woman who did this, oh, she was called a community organizer. She's now one of the leads in the California legislature. So she said, wait a minute, we've been trying to close down liquor stores after the fires in L.A. when so many liquor stores closed down. They said, why are you fast-tracking? Why are you building them back up? The city said, oh, no, we need our revenue. We need to get back to everything just the way it used to be. The community said, no. These institutions have been harmful. They have not been contributing. Everybody says you can't measure prevention, but when they shut down these 200 liquor stores within 3 years, an average of 27% reduction in crime in the four-block area around these liquor stores. These are simple examples of prevention on a community level. What I'm trying to say is prevention is primary. That also happens to be the name of a textbook that I edited because we need a new generation that really gets it. We need a new generation that not is going to live shorter, but a new generation that is going to help to be longer, healthier, more sustainable, happier than ever before. A key part of doing this is reorganizing government. And I've had the privilege and the joy to work with Jeff on what the healthcare structure can look like in the next administration to bring a social determinants prevention effort much more into play, and I'm excited he's going to share that in a minute. But the moral of my story, very simply, if we don't change direction, we're likely to end up just where we're headed. We've been talking about the stimulus package. We think there'll be perhaps $150 billion stimulus package. We think it's critical that prevention be part of the stimulus package. It can save lives. It can create jobs, green, healthy jobs. It relates to embracing our youth. We can start to reduce the disparities that are unacceptable in this country. And then in the end, it will save us money. What could be better? So please give me your cards. Please sign on and join us. We need to develop the specific platform there. I've covered a lot of stuff. That's our website. I hope to talk to you later. Thank you very much.
It's hard to follow Larry's energy, but...